of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay, let's get another hour going. It is a Tuesday, May 27th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway with Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit Calgary Lock and Safe. .com. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Good to hear. Last week we were not able to chat with our guest of the hour because a little under the weather. I'm glad that our friend Megan Mickelson is feeling a little bit better and joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to kick off the hour right now. The color voice of the Calgary Flames is Megan Mickelson right now. Hello, Mick.
Hey, Pat, how are you?
Good. How are you feeling? Are we getting closer to 100 again?
Yeah, I'm probably, like, I would say 95%. So I'm getting there. This one was tough.
Yeah, felt like it sounded like when I talked to you last week, you're like, yeah, I feel like absolute garbage. So I'm glad that we're on the mend. That's what I like to hear.
Me too.
How's the off season treating you?
It's good. It's, you know, I feel like I'm in, you know, full sport mom mode. Calder's playing ball. He's playing spring hockey, Berkeley swimming. They're playing tennis. So I'm in my sport mom era right now. And it's been nice. A good little change of pace. But I do oddly miss the grind of the season. I definitely miss calling games. But it's been a good change of pace for sure.
Okay, good. Logo and I have talked about a lot of different things over the last week and a bit here. Lots of different topics that we have to manufacture when we're this far into the off season with no Flames games, but still coming up with some fun topics to kick around. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this one last week, and I wanted to kick off our conversation with you on it this week. You know, you were there at Crypto.com Arena, and you saw with your own two eyes Zane Parekh's NHL debut against the LA Kings, scores the goal, and gets a ton of ice time, plays with Kevin Ball all night, and is a big part of that big win for the Flames as they wrap up the season with a victory. So knowing what you saw in Game 82, knowing what Zane Parekh projects to be, knowing the season he's coming off, so on and so forth, like, you're a former defender as well. How excited are you to see Zane Parekh as early as this coming season for the Flames?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being completely honest, like, going into that game in L.A., like, I wasn't sure what we were going to see from him, just because you think back to last year's preseason, and he was, you know, and I'm, again, being honest, as I always am, he was very underwhelming in the preseason, and you can't blame him. He's coming in. It's his first NHL camp preseason. All of that, everything he had been through since the draft, didn't have a great summer of training. So, you know, going into that game in L.A. on April the 17th, I was just kind of like, you know, what are we going to see from this guy? And I was extremely impressed, I'm sure, along with everybody else. And I think, you know, the one thing that he really demonstrated, along with obviously the skill and his agility, skating, his mobility, but it was just that the confidence that he very obviously has. But I think that coupled with how he was humbled in the preseason, I think it sort of brought him back down to earth, just in terms of, you know, how he's going to be successful at the NHL level, given the tools that he has, the things he needs to work on, and knowing that, you know, this isn't something that's going to come easy to him. I think he probably got to a point in junior where, you know, things felt easy. Well, the NHL wasn't going to be easy. So, you know, you look at him and coming in and having a couple of weeks with the team, that experience, being with the group, you know, seeing the ins and outs of everything and just how they operate on a day-to-day basis when, you know, they're in the middle of a playoff push, or were in the middle of a playoff push. And I think that that experience for him was invaluable and will really help him heading into next season. The other thing I think will help him heading into next season is his experience with Team Canada prior to the World Championships and being overseas, being around guys like Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon, but also being there with a teammate in Mackenzie Weegar and seeing how those guys, you know, you saw it with the Flames, or he would have seen it with the Flames, just how they take care of their bodies off the ice, nutrition, preparation, all those things. I think Crosby and MacKinnon, from what I've heard and what I know anyways, those guys are like next level when it comes to all of that stuff. So being able to see that firsthand and get that experience, I think, you know, you take that away and he takes that away into the summer. And I think he's going to have a great summer of training, and that will really benefit him next season, because, you know, I think that all the tools are there. Very obviously, I think that the defensive side of his game, that was something that I was pleasantly surprised with in that game against the Kings, was, you know, he obviously put in an effort to become a better defender. He was trying to be physical in the corners, net front, all of those things, but also having to put on a little bit of weight and, you know, some muscle, some bulk, so that he could be more physical and more effective as a defender at the NHL level. So I'm really, really excited to see, you know, how he shows up at camp, the strides he will have made over the course of the summer. He'll get in a really, really solid off season. And I think that he'll come into camp a lot stronger, you know, and in better shape than he did last season, but also with that experience under his belt. You know, I'm pretty pumped to see how he shows up.
Yeah, it's funny how much we've talked about Zane already this offseason, and it feels pretty quickly like he's going to become one of the bigger storylines in training camp as he was this year. And one of the fun things that we've had a chance to kick around, Mick, is who do you think Zane is best suited to play with next year? Because there are a couple of interesting options, and we know Mackenzie Weegar can play on his left side. He got game 82 in with Kevin Ball. I wonder if training camp becomes one of those things where Ryan Huska and the coaching staff maybe don't experiment with a couple of different D partners to see what works best for Zane in that respect.
Yeah, training camp's definitely a really good opportunity to do that. You know, I know that Ryan Huska, it's not just in the games that they look at the pairings. They also, you know, take a pretty close look at them in practice as well. But Pat, when you sent me this, I was like, who's Zane Perrette's ideal defense partner in my eyes? And I was like, well, I'm going to have fun with this and pick one guy who is not a member of the Calgary Flames guy who is a member of the Calgary Flames. So I think for me, not a member of the Flames, and this will never happen, his ideal defense partner to me would be Devon Toews. I say that because, he's a left-handed shot. But also, you look at what Toews has been able to do for Cale Makar and how well he's complemented his game. And I see a lot of similarities in the way that Zane Perrette plays and the way that Cale Makar plays. And I just think that he would have been like the perfect complementary piece in terms of, you know, he's really solid defensively. He's a great puck mover. He will jump up in the play, but he lets Cale go first. And kind of do his thing and hold down the fort, but he's really responsible, plays well, you know, at both ends of the ice. So non-Calgary Flame would be
like
Devon
Toews. I like that a lot. I like the way you took that. I like that.
Yeah, you gotta have fun with it, right? I think, you know, for the Flames, I was thinking of two guys. The first was Kevin Ball. I like the lefty-righty personally, and being a former defenseman, I just always found that it was a lot easier to move the puck to one another, to support the puck. It's a lot easier to make D-to-D passes and whatnot. But the way that the Flames play, I don't think that that's necessarily super important because they don't like going east-west that much. They prefer for the defenseman to move the puck north if they can. So you don't see as many D-to-D passes in the way that they play and in their system. So that's not quite as important. You know, the thing with Kevin Ball is, you know, and the reason why he'd play well with Zane Perrette is because he's solid defensively. He's a big body. He skates really well, makes a good first pass. And so I think that he would allow Perek, just from an offensive standpoint, to get up in the play and just to kind of do his thing while he was the one holding down the fort. But I also think that Mackenzie Weegar and playing on his offside, we've seen him and his ability to do that. I think that he would be a better fit for Perek. And I say that because of his leadership and his experience. And, you know, just from a mentorship standpoint, you spend a lot of time on the bench with your D partner, off the ice as well, and chatting about, you know, things that work and things that don't work. And I just think that Perek would really benefit from playing with a guy like Weegar, just how chatty he is, what a great leader he is, sharing his experience, talking through plays and all of that. So from a sheer development standpoint, if I had to pick one guy, I think that I would pick Mackenzie Weegar for those reasons.
It's funny, Logo, when you and I talked about it, it was those two guys that came to mind as well, Weegar or Ball. And you know, the one thing Logo had brought up, Mick, and this doesn't surprise anybody, but you know, when you hear that Mackenzie Weegar, after they did their little kind of night out with the boys after the season came to an end, and Zane told us on locker cleanout day that, you know, like he had like a 3-hour conversation during that night with Mackenzie Weegar. It wasn't just about the fact that Perek doesn't own a pair of jeans. Also the fact that like they kind of basically gave him the lowdown, Mick, is like what it's going to take going forward to be a member of the Flames and what it's going to take to succeed next year. All those types of things, which, you know, that's kind of who Uyghur's become on this team right now. So just another added reason why that could really be a nice fit.
Yeah, and it's not to underscore, you know, Kevin Ball and his abilities or anything like that. But I just think, you know, Uyghur's probably a guy that, and by the sounds of the way that he was talking about him on locker cleanout day, that he really looks up to. And so I think that would, you know, go a long way just in, you know, kind of helping him along in what would be his first NHL season. The other thing is Mackenzie Weegar plays a bag of minutes. And I think that if Perek can play the way that he did in that game in LA and, you know, play a ton of minutes, then that will just expedite his development process.
Yeah. We're chatting with Megan Mickelson. She joins us every week here on Flames Talk on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Opportunity to chat with the color voice of the Flames once a week. Last maybe topic we'll kick around. It's Pat Steinberg, Logan Gordon, and Mick along with you on this hour of Flames Talk. You know, I was thinking about this because, you know, there's been a lot of talk, and even in the first hour, Logo and I kicked around and been like, hey, centers, you know, the Flames need more help down the middle and especially more young help down the middle. They addressed it to a certain degree with the Morgan Frost acquisition in late January. But, you know, whether it's the draft next month or whether it's a trade or however they go about it, adding young centers to the group is a really important priority. And yet we're coming off a second consecutive season where Nazem Kadri has been this team's bar none number one center. He put up two seasons ago, your first season calling games with us, Mick. It was the second highest point total he's ever put up in his NHL career. And this past season, he sets a new career high with 35 goals as a member of the Flames. He does that at the ages of 33 and 34. He'll be 35 in October. So we're talking about Nazem Kadri in his mid-30s, and yet here he is raising the bar for himself each and every season, it feels like. So You played until what, 38 was when you wrapped things up, Mick? So you'd have a pretty good idea on this. Like how we look at, oh well, over 30 in the NHL, oh, you're starting to get a little long in the tooth. And here's Nazem Kadri, who's raising the bar for himself every single year, especially the last two seasons. How's he been able to do that in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, there's a lot of benefits that come with getting older as a player. You know, I don't think that it's always the case like that you get older, you get slower. I really don't believe in that. I think that everyone has a peak, and a peak age, and that's different for everybody. And for Nazem Kadri, he very clearly has not hit that peak age quite yet because he keeps getting better and better, like you said. But I think as you get older, and one thing that I found anyways was, well, first of all, with your training, you have a really, really good base, and you've put in a lot of hours. So in terms of just the base that you have from an aerobic standpoint, an anaerobic standpoint, a strength standpoint, not that Nazem Kadri is, the biggest, strongest guy, but, for the way that he needs to play the game, he's figured out from a physical conditioning standpoint, what works for him. And so, with that, especially with the aerobic base, a lot of people think hockey players, the shifts are short. It's a very, power speed based sport where you need short bursts and you need muscle bulk, but you also need a really solid aerobic endurance base so that you can sustain, your speed and your power over the course of an entire season. And that's not something that you have at a really young age. So I found it easier and easier, as I got older, less energy and time you have to spend on your conditioning from that standpoint, the more time you have to spend on other things. And that's improving the areas of your game that will allow you to really improve and to make strides and to, at the end of the day, probably score more goals or do more of what makes you successful as a player. So, Nazem Kadri has that really solid base. And so he's able to spend his time, on other things. If it's working on his shot, watching video and figuring out other ways that he can manipulate defenders so that he can get into higher danger areas on the ice, he has that time to do those things. And, I think that's the other piece of it, too, is he's very clearly a guy that wants to get better and works to get better. You don't just show up to practice and to games and go out there and you're just better. It's stuff that you're doing away from the rink. It's stuff that you're doing in the summers to get better and mm-hmm. training. These guys they're not just working out in the summer. They're also working with private skills coaches one-on-one. They're skating, they're watching video. They're figuring out how they can get better. And that's a lot more than just working out in the gym. And to me, he's very clearly a guy that does that. He puts in that time to figure out how he can be better, what he needs to do to be better. And then the last piece of that is he's able to execute it in a game. So he works on it to a point where once he gets into a game, it's habitual, it's instinctual, and, he's able to execute it. And, the other thing, too, I think as you get older, and what I found is, what you need to do to play your best consistently, and you're able to do that. To be able to figure out, the type of player that you are and how you need to show up every single day to be your best, that takes time as well. And then to figure out how to do that consistently day in and day out, that takes time also. And, he's a guy, he knows how to do that. And he has the fire, the passion, the drive, all of those things that have allowed him to continue to get better. So, I think that, when he shows up next season, and I think we all know this, yes, he will have been happy with the point production and the success that he had this year, but he's going to want to up that next season. Mm-hmm. So, I'm expecting him to come back and to be the same guy and more next season.
It's been pretty impressive to see how he's really embraced that leadership role and the whole idea of, hey, I'm now here to be a part of more than just helping this team. I need to be kind of a central part of what this team is all about. It really feels like the last two seasons, Mick, he's really not only embraced that, but kind of just realized that, hey, I'm here to be more than just an important player. I need to be the man on this team. And I think that's really energized him as well.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, you look at the position that he was put in, you know, with Martin Pospisil and Connor Zary last season, and, you know, he was almost forced to be a leader. But I think that it's, you know, it's very empowering when the coaches show that level of trust and that level of belief and give you that responsibility to be that type of leader. Like, I know, you know, when you're the coaches pull you aside and they tell you, like, I've had it happen before, like, you're playing with this younger player, we really want you to help with your experience and bring them along and da da da. Like, that's, you know, you take a lot of pride in that as an older player, because, you know, you've been there, you've been through it, that you can help them. So I think that, you know, him being given that responsibility as well has really helped his play. Like, he knows that he can't just talk the talk. Like, he needs to walk the talk. And if he's going to help younger players along, then he needs to go out there and do all the things that he's telling him. He needs to do them himself. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, to me, the one thing that really sets him apart is just that drive and that passion that he has. I'll never forget, you know, the game where the Flames found out, it was, you know, obviously, I think it's the end of the second period, they found out they were eliminated from the playoffs last season. And I remember looking down at the bench, and it was literally seconds after the Minnesota Wild had scored the goal to tie the game, and the Flames found out that they were going to be eliminated. I found out they were getting updated on the bench, and Nazem Kadri took a water bottle and just absolutely, like, threw it down on the ground, slammed it down on the bench. And so, you know, it's that level of passion and that drive that he has that not only, you know, benefits him and, you know, his play on the ice, obviously, but yeah, I think he makes everyone around him better too with that.
Yeah. Agreed. Good stuff, friend. Enjoy the rest of your week. We will, we'll chat again next week, but, enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy, all the kids' sports and, be well.
Oh,
thanks,
I will.
Friend. That was good. That was great as always.
Big hockey tourney this weekend for little Calder. So, see how that goes. I'll be in the rink all weekend.
Where else would you
Where
be?
Where else would I be?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. thanks, Mick. Good stuff. Appreciate it, friend.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That's Megan Mickelson, the color voice of the Calgary Flames, joins us once a week here on Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Logo along with you this hour, and Mick joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Steinberg and Logo as we roll on this Tuesday edition of the program. Game 4 Western Conference Final, Tuesday night in Edmonton. Game time decision for Roope Hintz. No Matias Ekholm.
He is taking warm-ups.
No Connor Brown. He took warm-ups in Game 3, though, and didn't play. For the Oilers, no Ekholm again, but he's getting close.
They don't even need him. Stay out the entire playoff, Matias. They don't need you.
No Connor Brown. He'll miss the game, so that means Arvidsson back in. And Cal Pickard is ready to address, and he will back up Stuart Skinner on Tuesday night. The Hintz one remains the biggest story for me because, you know, Connor Brown's been a nice role player for him, and he's done some good things without question. But, you know, I don't know how much of a downgrade going from Brown to Arvidsson is. I mean, you can survive that. And they've been just fine without Ekholm since he's been out. They haven't played a single game with him in the postseason. So getting Ekholm back will just be gravy if they get him back this series. But, boy, if the Stars could get even a 65% Roope Hintz back in the lineup, that gives them so much more. You feel so much more confident about what the Stars are capable of in Game 4 if Hintz is able to take warm-up and then also face off on Tuesday night.
It's just a much more complete team with Roope Hintz in the lineup, and they put him on that top line with Granlund and Rantanen, and they've been able to do a ton of damage this postseason. And it's interesting because for as deep as this Dallas team is, the depth really hasn't got it done. Wyatt Johnston was a big topic of discussion across the league today because he's minus 17 in these posts, in these playoffs. And I think Friedman had the stat, five of them were empty netters. So, okay, so you're minus 12. That's still not great for a guy that got a hefty extension.
Yeah.
You know, Matt Duchene, Jason Robertson, I know is coming off of an injury, but need somebody to step up here. And if those guys aren't going to do it and Hintz is out, it's going to be hard for the Dallas Stars to keep up with the Oilers right now.
Yeah, it's and I mean, Edmonton's playing some really good hockey. Like, this is not... this is not the same Oilers even from last year. They're that much more difficult to match up against. They're a little deeper than they were last year, and they're a little less reliant on the two big guns than they have been before. And yet those two guys are still massive difference makers and can turn a game on its side in the blink of an eye. So we'll see if Hintz can get back into the lineup and if that can just add a little bit more balance to Dallas's four lines in game number four of this series. Stars looking to wrestle back home ice in this series, see if they can do that in game four. I will say Carolina probably deserved at least a game in the Eastern Conference Final because, look, what was it? What ended up being the route? Was it game two or game three that ended up being
two.
A route? Game two ended up being the route. That's right. For the most part, though, like, Carolina's been competitive and they've played their tails off. It's just been a momentary lapse here or there, and then Florida is so good and so steady that the moment another team makes a mistake, they're ready to pounce on it and drive it down your throat, and what they have done multiple times in the first three games. So I think Carolina probably deserved one in this series, and now they're able to come back home and fight for their lives again in game five. But boy, even like that was a grind of a win. Like they needed Freddie Anderson to be outstanding. That thing was scoreless until the third. Like that was a grind of, that's a 1-0 win because they scored two into an empty net. Like that Carolina had to grind just to get one in this series. Even to get this thing back to Florida, do they have another effort like that? Because you're gonna need three more of those against Florida. And I just, the way the Panthers play, that's how you beat the Panthers, what Carolina did on Monday night. But does Carolina have the horses to be able to do that even one more time, let alone three more times?
Even then, skeptical. Does Florida take the kind of penalties they did in game four?
Yeah, they were a little...
They were a little loose about everything. Yep. And I just sit there and go, okay, if you take those out, do they win that game? I don't know if they do. They kind of get a little bit back to their game, and you're kind of just sitting there going, okay, man, I don't know how Carolina feels about this, but it can't be good right now. That's a tough look for them. And yeah, look, I mean, they had a long conference finals losing streak that they needed to get off of their back. That was becoming a little bit ridiculous to keep hearing and talking about the 0-15 in the conference finals. So I'm sure in some respects it felt good to do that, but as far as, I don't know, you tell me they're getting back in the series now, I would venture to guess that's still a very, very long shot. Again, I'm still surprised we're even talking about a game five in this series. Yeah. The way it's gone.
Game five of this series now goes on Wednesday night. We'll have it for you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan with a 6 o'clock faceoff. Okay, last thing in the hockey world that is of note is... it is confirmed. We weren't sure which way this was going to go. Had a pretty good inkling. But the IIHF has confirmed that Russia will not take part in the 2026 Milan Olympic hockey tournament. So, look, without getting geopolitical on you, and we that's not what we like to do on Flames Talk. We all understand.
We'll make an exception today.
We all understand why Russia is not going to take part in the Olympics. You know, it's for certain players, it's too bad they won't have that opportunity. And for things that are out of their control, I feel bad for a few individual guys who could be taking part in the event. But I don't think we're surprised by that. I don't think that we're shocked by that. Belarus also not eligible, but also they weren't going to anyway because they weren't able to qualify their way in. So it'll be France who is the beneficiary. France was, is the team that was next in line based on the Olympic qualifiers. So France will move into Canada's group now at the Olympics in Milan. It's crazy to think that we're actually less than a year away from Olympic hockey with NHLers once again. The Four Nations was awesome, and you know it's been lauded not just by hockey fans, but by sports business professionals and people in the sporting world, period, for how successful it was. And you go from that to now the biggest stage of them all, and look, you've got guys who have not, a ton of guys who have never played in this event before.
No.
And I still believe like some of the best hockey we've ever seen just in terms of the way it's played is those 2010 round robin games, those 2014 round robin games, the 02 round robin, like this, and it's different. They cared in the Four Nations. Don't get me wrong. I was actually pleasantly surprised how
that was everyone's biggest question heading in.
A made up event. How are players going to buy in? Well, to a man, everybody bought in. Well, that buy-in, I think, is going to get cranked up that much more at the Olympics. I honestly, man, Russia or no Russia, I cannot wait for the puck to drop in February.
Yeah, and you thought the buy-in was good from the Four Nations, and it certainly was, but this is specifically what players wanted in a lot of collective bargaining agreements lately, Pat.
Well, remember they tried to get it in for 2022,
exactly,
and then the NHL...
This is what they wanted. This is what most of them have been, you know, kicking down doors and talking to their reps about, is that we want a chance to go back to the Olympics. They concede somewhat on the money side of things by doing things like the Four Nations and the World Cup of Hockey will come back, and I think they understand that the owners want some sort of compensation that way and are getting it through those NHL-run international tournaments.
And the IIHF and IOC had to make some concessions, and they finally figured out that, you know, it's probably better for, especially the IOC figured out that it's probably better for our bottom line if the NHL is here, because the hockey tournament, with no disrespect to, you know, to guys like Matt Robinson and Rene Bork and guys who went and represented Canada.
It's not the same. It doesn't get the same attention.
It's not the same because it's not the same spectacle.
No. And all of this is where I'm incredibly interested to see, because they wanted this. Now show us why you wanted it, right? And I fully expect it to be the only thing with the Four Nations face-off, Pat, that you wanted was a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You wanted it to be a little bit longer, but in season you just couldn't do that. You couldn't ask that of guys to give any more than they did in a short period of time. And you were leaving some of the best at home. Now, you can make that argument again because Russia's not going to be there, but that's a different conversation. Everybody else, in terms of the best is going to be there and an opportunity to go through a bigger round robin and probably a better opportunity to dive in and build some chemistry and really have conversations about goaltending, right? I don't think any of the teams of the Four Nations could have a conversation about goaltending because you didn't even have time to give another guy a start. The States managed to get Ottinger into a game that didn't matter, mm-hmm. but they were always going back to Hellebuck because he won the first two for them. Right? Would the conversation have been different for Canada with Binnington and all the other options? I think we're going to get more of that. I'm excited about it. It's going to be a massive, massive thing, and we're going to get, I think, more of that intensity that we saw from Four Nations again.
Well, I would have liked to see one more game at the Four Nations so that Sweden wasn't playing a meaningless game there.
Yes.
I would have liked to see the potential. Like, give me a bye to the gold medal game and then a semi. Like, basically, just do what the Memorial Cup does. I think the more, in terms of a
format,
short tournament format, I really do think the Memorial Cup's got it right. When you play the round robin, then if you need to, and maybe you couldn't do this in the Four Nations, but you got that playoff game as a floater if two teams are tied.
Yeah,
then you got the
scheduling
semi.
Was so tight.
So maybe you can't do that, but you could have. They could have scheduled in a semifinal game so that final game between that Sweden was playing was still meaningful,
yep.
And so then they're still playing for something, and Finland's still playing for something, and then the Americans would have got the bye to the gold medal game, and then Canada would have probably had to play Finland or Sweden in the semifinals. I would have liked to see that.
It's the only complaint I had, and even then, I was having a hard time complaining about anything Four Nations-based, so I can't. I'm already all over conversations for anybody that wants to talk about Olympic rosters and who's helped their case, who's hurt their case. Talked about that with Cron in hour one. Ottinger beats Hellebuck in the postseason. How does that affect the American goaltending conversation? All of it. How did the World Cup, the World Championship, excuse me, affect how guys... Look at the guys that went to the World Championship. You can't tell me they weren't a beneficiary of there being an Olympics next year.
Yep.
Because guys were saying, okay, well, I want to make a good impression with my club.
I think that, like, I don't think Crosby or McKinnon...
They don't touch that tournament if there's not an Olympic year.
But they're saying, okay, I want to gear myself up, get a little bit of recent taste of international, playing on international ice.
And your teammates that are going to be there, all that stuff is important. They don't touch that tournament if there's not an Olympics coming up.
So here's now with Russia confirmed not to be taken part. It'll be Canada, Czechia, Switzerland, France in Group A.
It's a good group for Canada now.
Yeah, for sure. Without Russia in it, that's
no offense.
Every team
to France.
Yeah. You know what? Good luck. Bonne chance.
Yeah.
Bonne chance à France, à la France.
Entrez-vous, you're going to lose by 10.
You're probably going to have some issues, yes. The good news is all 8 teams will play an elimination game, though, or all 12 teams, rather, will play an elimination. So they're going to do the top 4 teams. So there's 3 groups. So the group winners and the next highest team all get a bye to the quarterfinal. The remaining 8 teams play a little playoff qualifier to get to the quarterfinals, semis, gold medal game. Group B, Finland, Sweden, Slovakia, and host Italy. And then Group C, the United States has the easiest of the groups. United States with Germany, Latvia, and Denmark. So those are the 3 groups at the 2026 Olympic Games in Milan. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program. Logan Gordon's on Twitter at Fan960Logan. Our producers this hour, Cam Hughes and Riley Clark. My name is Pat Steinberg. This hour has been the Sports Drive as we wrap up. Sports Drive for Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.